opportunity at some point. Like being a word or something. What I've been trying to do in the daily liturgy is to break it up. And it's just kind of fascinating how it could happen. In daily liturgy, we'll be able to do it. Coming to the point of asking if anyone has a word for anyone. And to do this kind of systematically, to have it to read orders. Secondly, if anybody feels the Lord's been saying to them anything during the day, reading, which is proclaimed, or spoken to them during the week. Show that, and lastly, if they don't need prayer. Maybe it's a prayer in general, maybe it's a specific, maybe it's a feeling of direction and guidance, it's a clarity, whatever it is. And I'm just so grateful for the Lord and how he's been moving, and I'm so reminded of that narrative testimony, Elijah and the drought, where he's praying for the drought to come to an end. And I know you're so familiar with that story where he tells the servant to go out and look and see if he sees anything in the sky. When he goes out several times and he's coming back, he says, no, and finally comes back. He says, why see this tiny little cloud in the sky? He says to him, you need to hurry down and get into your chariot. You need to get into your town, because if you don't, it can rain to harvest. And that's what we just pray that the Lord continues to wash us, to rise us, water our hearts, to set us free, to know that there's times that we can't so much hear the kind of clarity that we would like of what the Lord is saying to us. Sometimes it's ironic that we can hear for others. We just all of a sudden something comes up and we just have this kernel, this night. None of it is doing. We speak it out of faith, praying that it would bless the others. Sometimes without even realizing that we're longing for their own parts of them. We just pray that our expectations will never diminish. Because the Father we are attentive to, and that is which we minister. So I want to read a couple of passages. Kind of ramble on in here. So this is from Romans chapter 8, beginning in verse 15. I'll try to give those of you, and I love the sound of the pages turning, very comforting. So even if you don't have a Bible, you can just grab a book and turn the pages in. I know some of you are strong, and some of you choose not to do that. I have found over the years, not just trying to be obedient, but a value. For you did not receive the spirit of the bondage of the fear, but you received the spirit of adoption by the sacrifice of the Father. The Spirit himself bears witness to our spirit that we are children. And if children, then heirs, heirs of our and joint heirs with Christ, if indeed he suffered, that we may also be a glorified spirit. And then to Galatians chapter 4. Beginning in verse 4. But when the fullness of time had come, God sent forth his Son, born of a woman, born under the law, to redeem those who were under the law, that we might receive the adoption of sons. And because you are sons, God has sent forth the Spirit of his Son into your hearts, crying out, Abba, Father. Therefore, you are no longer a slave, but a son.
and give the Son an heir of God to Christ. And one more in the first book of Samuel, John chapter 14. Beginning in verse 1. Let not your heart be troubled, you believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions, if it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go to prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also. Our Father is not a caretaker of orphanages. He's not a caretaker of orphans. He's a caretaker of God. He would die for his beloved sons and daughters. We're not a part of orphanage. For his beloved children. You know, and when that reality comes deeper and deeper in us, who we are, whose we are, the sense of strength, safety, and security about knowing our identity grows. And the things we can wrestle with become somehow less and less. Less and less the sweet and sweet wheel that always needs to be. More that sense of. I don't know if you've ever struggled with your identity, who you are. Most people do. It seems like people go through seasons, you know, obviously, classically. Talk about people in their teenage years and trying to find their identity. And in that process, sometimes terrible. Just kept a few or so of you got it out of your day. But you know, finding one's identity and kind of who they are when they get married, who they are when they move or they go through a loss, something changes in their lives. People often go through a loss by trying to find their identity. Change a job or lost a job. And when you get to that ripe age and all of a sudden you're a senior citizen, and you think, so there's that. As ongoing times where we feel very comfortable with who we are, and other times where we can be a little shaky. And it's not about trying to fake it, but it is kind of depressing. But in the midst of that, remembering that regardless of our actual natural background, we have a Father that is so gracious. I like that. I don't know if you know today. Today is the Feast of Christ the King. It's the last Sunday of the liturgical year. And I have all kinds of notes here. I'm debating whether or not to go through them. So, culturally, this is the end of the year. And I know you've heard me mention this before, but this is the end of the year culturally. I mean, the energy there to do it in the church. The last day of the year. And the culture starts again. The trip of the liturgical year begins today. And the rest of the week kind of pulls that out and we begin next Sunday. And one of the things to think about in regards to the new year is not the same as our culture. Thanks be to God. And if you consider the implications,
yeah.
The implications of that is that the rhythm of the church is not the same rhythm.
Thanks be to God.
When you consider that, the rhythm church is not the same rhythm. And so we talk about being in the world but not part of it. We talk about being influenced by the world. We talk about wrestling times with our flesh and the enemy. The liturgical year comes along and says, "Here." I don't know if you've ever, any of you ever been in a situation where, for example, you've been talking to someone and you're talking to them, and as you're talking to them, you're kind of thinking about something else. Like those of you who are acting like you're paying attention to me, would you really say that? You ever had that experience? Kind of goes on all the time, right? You're talking to someone and to be a little glib, it's like, when can I get out of the conversation? This is my favorite thing on the chalkboard. That's not very nice. But you're talking to someone and thinking about something else. You ever had that?
Yeah.
It's interesting in ministry, even having the opportunity, Stacy and I know that many of you have been involved in all kinds of ministry. Different occasions, and so I'm narrowing my comment to ministry in particular. That when you're in the process of feeling in this particular moment that the Lord is calling you to ministry to someone, it's like you're listening to them on the one hand, but you've got this whole other dialogue, this whole other sensing. What is the Lord saying? You've got this other conversation going on. You're here, but you're also. And it was kind of like the world and the church. If you think about it, we are living our lives in the world, but it's the same, in a sense, our Christian life. We're living in the same world. And we're asking the Lord in that rhythm of where we find ourselves in the world to continue to speak to us. We're on this roller coaster and navigating, as it were, to the world, and at the same time having this ongoing dialogue. Like the last song, we're hoping to grow. Father, what are you saying? Father, what are you doing? What are you saying? What are you doing as I navigate through this next experience, as I do this next thing? So if we were to look back over the last 365 days, say, how did this last year go? What happened this last year? Remember my sharing with you how the Jesuits, because I was trained so much by the Jesuits have this pattern that they would always do at the end of the day, the pattern. Thank you. ways I'm aware of the thoughts of coming to the community. Now what I pray for the presence. The idea is because they were called to be so studious, because the rigor of the academic life was so intense that it was trying to take more than 5 to 15 minutes at the end of the day just to be attentive to that. And the intent was that instead of doing it 15 minutes at the end of the day, it would become such a rhythm in their life that they would find themselves doing it. Instead of just stopping and waiting and doing it at the end, became this lifestyle, this constant growth. So that you're navigating yourself continually. Cast down all imagination and every time that it exalts itself against the laws of God's dreams. You ever had a thought in your head that you wish you really did?
Yes.
In fact, if you think sometimes driving down the road and think, oh my Lord, the thoughts I'm having right now, it's put on a rest. And there's a sign out there, I would want to move someplace else and change my name. Romans 12, 1 to 2, is that we conform to the Lord and transform our renewal of mind. And to think like that. Oh, Father, what are you doing for this? Because there's intended to be a need. We talk about the Christian life as to be a life of our own kind. It's absolutely beautiful. Possible. When we try to do it on our own, the barometer for recognizing doing it on our own is the measure of frustration and irritation we have. So we look at that and think, man, the barometer is that frustration, irritation, doubt, shame, condemnation, fear, worry, anxiety, just watch around me and know this is safe. And I stumble over it. I don't like my life better. I don't like it. And so that whole barometer of our life is saying, oh, Lord, give me your kingdom, think I have. Because the more of your kingdom there is in my life, the more I'm going to recognize that I think the Lord is going to come. Life kind of like the Lord is my shepherd, I come to the He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me by the still waters. He leads me the path of life. Yea, though I walk through the valley of shadow of death, I fear no evil, for the Lord is with me. Kind of like that. Kind of like getting in there. So, you get a start. You take all that gear and wrap it all up, drop it at the foot of the cross, and say, Father, I pray. Take all that burden off, wrap it all up, put it. Okay. See, that's really, really a good way. When I get the opportunity of embracing going into this new year, and remember what happened, joyful anticipation, preparation, coming, the great feast of the coming. I get an opportunity to be excited about the rhythm of heaven, the joy of heaven. Remember the angels appearing to the shepherds, and the shepherds were born. I start to anticipate what the Lord is going to do. Take all this last year, know the successes and failures and joy of all of my future days. Remember Jesus and the Lord in the name. Because we are new creations in
him. Hallelujah.
Look at your love and regardless, like I said, of what our background is, of what our actual biological background is. Along with him, along with one another. So, my note here, so just let you know I have them. Why do you need to do without my notes? So if you want to go to the gospel, go to chapter 2. Such misunderstandings, and I think that still exists. And I sometimes think that can even exist at times. A bit of a misunderstanding about how we're listening. Obviously, it's exacerbated when we look at the text, because it mentions that verse 35, and the people stood looking on, but even the rulers with them sneered, saying, "He saved himself, and he is the Christ." And when I was thinking about this, and then thinking about it, we continue on the gospel of two themes that are crucified on either side of Jesus. One, we have come to name business, the other, we have come to name business. And if you think about the life of Jesus in the world, I kind of went through and I was thinking of a few passages that I want to look about, but I don't think I want to. But I can touch it. When Jesus is asked to go to Jairus' house and heal his daughter who's dying, remember that? And he gets there to the house and he says to them that she's not dead, she's asleep. Do you remember what you did?
They laughed.
I don't know if you've ever felt laughed at. It's great if you're telling a joke and you're the delight of the party and you do something that's very funny and people are laughing with you because you're which you laughed at. But when Jesus goes into Nazareth, he returns and he starts his ministry, goes and reads Isaiah, and he says, "Today this is fulfilled in your hearing." We know your mom, we know your dad, we know your brothers and your sisters. Who do you think you are? your attention. I had a good friend, Ursula Nunn, tell me one time, when she was thinking about the ministry of Jesus, she said, can you imagine if you had a retinue, a group of persons that were following you everywhere you went, hanging on your every word for the intended purpose of trying to catch you in your words and ridicule and laugh at you and undermine you. Everywhere you went, that's what you had, is a group following. Now, whether you are a Trump person or not, it's kind of like he does it to himself. The whole idea of how the media can do it is sort of scrutinizing. But just to imagine, if you had a group of people following you wherever you went, no matter what you did, started. Easter, because my milk is freezing, my food is cold. Take it down. You're going to find that all of a sudden, instead of living under the bridge, you're going to be on people's bridge. Where you will learn about the weary, you will walk and not faint, because all of a sudden I'm up here and I can see it. I can hear a lot better than you. Much better. The yoke is easy and it's burden is light, and I have this hunger and this desire more and more to know what it is, what it is doing. Jesus is a king. Kings have kings. So, if I can just give you some scripture passages, and this, if I can do this, what is it called? Popcorn, where you have people just reading. So, if I can ask somebody to look up Deuteronomy 29. Would you raise your hand to look that up? Isaiah 6. Isaiah 45. 3. Proverbs 25. 2. Would you look that up? Jeremiah 33. 3. And then Romans 11. So can you read Jeremiah 29:29 aloud? Deuteronomy 29:29, sorry.
The secret things belong to the Lord our God. These are revealed among us, to our children forever, that we may know them, that we may follow the whole word of the law.
Proverbs 25:2. Isaiah 45:3. I will give you hidden treasures, riches stored in secret places, so that you may know that I am the Lord, the God of Israel, who summoned you by name. Jeremiah 33:3. And Romans 11:33. Did you look at that? And then the last one, Luke 12:32, which I didn't get to you. Can you look up Luke 12:32? Do not be afraid that he's lost the Father has been pleased. That's a king. It says, fear not for the Father. It's the Father's will, your Father's desire. Fear. That's his desire to give you the kingdom. So fear not for the Father. It's his desire to give you all that he calls. All these treasures. It's amazing, isn't it, when you think of all this veiled language that almost seems a bit clandestine. It's kind of hidden. But please hear this. Things in the kingdom God does not hide from people. He's hiding them. He's hiding all this. You discover a king. And you want to go on. And the more we find ourselves in that building, it is And that you went down, he gave us gold, he gave us gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. And he asked us to go to give that away. That's kind of how it is. That's kind of how it is. There's knowledge and wisdom and healing to a servant's work that comes from him. Treasure is in secret places that he's given and he wants them to be given to someone else to walk from his room and say, here's my treasure. Madness.